Chapter 7. Of all my friends, the twins were the only ones I'd kept from before Niff and I hooked up. It wasn't that I didn't like Chuck and Luke and Monobrow Sam anymore, but everything changed once Niff and I got together. They all went off to college, off to lives as engineers and scientists. They thought I was ruining my life by staying behind with her, and they just moved on. And away from me. I didn't try too hard either to keep in touch. Niff's circle was much more accommodating and friendly than I thought they'd be, at least once I started to look the part. The twins knew a bit about being ostracized, and they lived in a community that had accepted them for who they were. They remained in Tucson, even after their parents moved away. They remained friends with me, and my new friends, along with all the old guys from high school. You might not recognize their names, but I bet if you've ever watched television, you've seen the twins. They had a reality show for a while that followed them around high school until the principal kicked out the camera crews. He'd heard the producers were bribing girls to fake interest in the twins. I appeared on the show too, 3 whole times, but this was all before we became close friends. I didn't have any speaking parts. Niff showed up a couple times also, scowling in the background. The sight of Royce and Randy was difficult to get used to. It's not every day you go to a new school, take your seat, and realize the person sitting in front of you has 2 goddamned heads. Siamese twins, some people call them. It's supposedly an offensive term, but they used it themselves. In case you don't know, here's the info from their Wikipedia page. 2 heads, 2 necks. Normal number of everything else on the outside. Normal for a single individual, that is. On the inside, 2 spines that fuse together just above the pelvis, 2 hearts, 4 lungs, but only 2 were fully functional, 2 stomachs, 3 kidneys, 1 reproductive system, each one controlled a side, and they walked kind of funny, but they ran faster than you might think. One of them, Royce, was a bit more skewed than the other, but in high school they were both good-looking in their own way. They had moved to Tucson as infants from Argentina to get treatment from the university. I did the whole pretending not to notice thing for a while, even when the TV crew invaded our school the last half of sophomore year. When we wound up together in the Rocket Club, we became friends. I even started thinking of them as 2 different people. It's funny how different they were. Both of them were geniuses, even back then. Royce was more into physics and astronomy, where Randy loved biology and military history. Both of them were horror buffs, books and film. They had a thing for circus sideshows and movies about freaks. To their mother's dismay, their room was filled with cool posters and action figures for movies like Freaks, Basket Case, House of Wax, etc. Randy used to say when they graduated they would join the Marines and be a sniper team. The reality show even did this whole thing where the TV crew took them to the recruiter's office. The look on the guy's face in the office was priceless. They never did join the Marines. I asked them once, after we'd been friends a while, about how they planned on having separate girlfriends with only 1 dick. Everyone wanted to know, but I was the only one brave or brash enough to ask. They were cool, even funny about it.
"That'll be the best part," Royce said. "We'll get twice the action," Randy said. "We both feel it."
It turned out this other set of conjoined twin girls, the same age, just like them, lived in Wyoming. The TV producers set it up so they could meet for the first time, and they had this grand idea that the 4 of them would fall in love and have foursomes and all that. It turned out they hated each other. Randy called one of them a cunt with all the cameras rolling. That was the end of that. After high school, the camera crews left them alone and the twins went to the U of A. They both graduated in 3 years with science degrees, astrophysics for Royce and biology for Randy. They went to graduate school and even taught undergrads, but they had to quit over a medical issue. I don't know all the details, but they had surgery on their chest and afterwards they got tired easily. So they ended up jobless and played video games all day. They did have a side business. Not quite legal, but it was pretty lucrative. They collected and sold guns. They lived 5 minutes from me, but it took almost a half hour to drive to their house. The streets were packed with cars, some of them abandoned even though the monster hadn't come this way. I had to travel the side streets and cut across a park filled with homeless people who threw beer cans at me as I passed. Once I got to Royce and Randy's place, there was no view of the rest of the city. When I pulled up, the twins were in front of their house, sitting on a bench and watching the sky. Airplanes and helicopters continued to strafe the grinder, but never dropped any bombs. Based on the position of the aircraft, it looked like it was a good 8 miles or more away, still on the south side of town.
We were expecting you,
Royce said as I got out. They wore sweatpants and a ripped t-shirt with Freddy Krueger on the front. The door to their Jeep was open and the radio blared Rush. Across their lap sat the biggest, weirdest shotgun I'd ever seen. It only had one barrel, but it sported a rotary wheel like one of those old-school Al Capone Tommy guns.
It's an AA-12,
Royce said as I walked up.
Gas-powered. Good for zombies,
Randy added.
Not so good in this situation. Her name is Velma, like the hot chick from Scooby-Doo,
Royce said. Guys,
we heard about Niff,
Randy began.
That scooter guy was here and—
She's alive, I said, interrupting before he could go off on one of his tangents. She called me. I told them about the phone call.
Whoa,
Randy said.
And you're sure it was her?
Of course it was her, I said. I swallowed. I want to help her escape. I swallowed again. And I need your help to do it.
I've already figured it out. It's an illusion.
God damn it, Royce, are you listening to me? I'd lost him. He just went on with his crazy theory.
It's not physically possible for that creature to exist.
He shook his head while Randy looked on in scorn.
If it was that size, it'd collapse under its own weight. Though I gotta admit, the human shield angle is pretty smart. Flesh is especially good at stopping bullets. Plus, there's the psychological aspect. I imagine it's fairly difficult to shoot a missile at a creature when you see your grandma sitting on its shoulder through the crosshairs.
Royce, I said, taking deep breaths so I didn't punch him like I did to Scooter. It's not an illusion. Have you looked out there? I waved toward the city. Half the fucking town is on fire. I saw it born. Didn't Scooter tell you how it came to be? He saw it too. He was closer than I was.
Nah, Royce said. He was just whining about getting his truck and cell phone stolen.
Randy laughed.
His nose is the size of a turnip. We didn't know you had it in you.
I don't give a shit about that little fuck. We need—
Wait. This is important, Royce said, interrupting.
That was their thing. Besides having two heads, I mean. They interrupted. A lot. They drove half-hour teachers into early retirement.
That little dude is really pissed about you jacking his truck. He's got friends with him, too. Those skinhead bastards. The real ones, not the wannabes. We just sold him a Glock.
You sold him a gun? When you knew he was looking for me? They shrugged.
We didn't know until after he had it in his hand,
Royce said.
But don't worry,
Randy said.
We gave him a clip filled with blanks.
Royce nodded.
Except there might be one in the chamber. I can't remember. So try to get him to fire a warning shot first. After that, you can fuck with him.
Under other circumstances, the thought of someone pissed at me enough to buy a gun would freak me out beyond words. But at the moment, I didn't give a shit. Look, fuck Scooter. Niff is alive, and the monster is real. I was there. The actual creature on its own is small, no bigger than a cat. Then people touch it or touch an infected person, and they are instantly attached. It takes over their mind, making them move and rearrange themselves all around it. I told them about Cece and everyone at the roller derby, and the Mexican kid, and how it got into the stadium. They were both silent when I finished. They looked deep in thought, and I wondered, not for the first time, if they could secretly share thoughts with one another.
So,
Royce said,
I was right. It's not a giant monster. It's like a wolf wall,
Randy said.
Or a Swedish fall, but a lot bigger. And without the cheerleaders. It hit the football game, remember? Yeah. I guess it did suck up some cheerleaders. I'm glad we didn't go. We had a ticket, you know. If I have to sit through one more insipid football game just so you can get a faggy cheerleader hard on. Hey, it's your cock getting hard, too.
Going off on wild tangents. That was another one of their things. Guys, I said, growing ever more frustrated. Please.
Aliens,
Randy said. not missing a step.
I concur, Royce said, softening us up for an invasion. Do we know if this is only happening here?
I don't know, I said. It was the first I thought of that. Was this happening in other places? If so, that changed a lot of things. First off, it meant the response to this disaster would be pretty slim compared to places with larger populations like, say, Los Angeles and Phoenix. Randy turned so I could look into his eyes.
The answer is simple.
I waited.
You gotta kill the thing attached to your wife's cousin.
No shit. How do I get to it?
We don't know, Randy said.
Listen, you're the smartest guys I know. I need ideas. I need to save Nif.
She's in an armored car, right?
Royce asked.
Interesting. I wonder why to do that for her. There must be something important about her, whatever you decide,
Randy said.
You better do it quick. They're going to drop a Moab on that thing sooner rather than later, and that won't be pretty. It'll spread Soylent Green all over the Southwest.
Royce nodded.
We'll be seeing some fat coyotes in the coming months.
Wait,
Randy said, turning to halfway look at his brother.
It attaches even through clothes? What about shoes?
I remembered a guy kicking at a person when it first formed. He got stuck, but only after his ankle became lodged. I told them what I saw.
I don't think this is magic,
Randy said.
Just because we don't understand it. There must be something physical happening, probably on a very small scale. The Irukandji jellyfish unleashes these tiny harpoon-like stingers from its tentacles in order to capture prey. They're so small they can pierce fabric. I bet this is something similar. Only in this case it grows fast and immediately connects to your nervous system.
And that guy you were talking about,
Royce said.
You said he wanted to run back to the monster. That means it messes with your head, even after you're free. Ooh, tell him about the zombie caterpillar thing.
Randy nodded.
The Glyptopantales. It's a parasitic wasp from Central America. It lays its eggs into the bodies of caterpillars. The eggs hatch and leave the host, but not before they do some serious rewiring to the caterpillar's brain. The larvae emerge from the caterpillar's skin and attach to a branch or leaf to pupate. And after the larvae leave, the host caterpillar is still alive, but it's turned into a giant guardian zombie. Just hangs out below the pulpating wasps, unmoving, starving to death until a predator comes along and tries to eat the babies. Then it goes berserk, thrashing about like Monobrow Sam at the Metallica concert. You remember that shit? Anyway, it's been brainwashed into protecting the baby wasps. Zombies,
Royce said. He patted the gun on their lap.
Maybe we'll get to use Velma after all.
The point is,
Randy said,
it may seem like an indestructible, earth-stomping magical beast, but even the craziest biological entities still have a scientific basis for existing. And that means there's got to be a way to kill it.
Hope surged in my chest when he said that, but only if it meant saving Nif at the same time. My mind was on a roll with questions.
What about these caterpillars? What happens to them after the wasps hatch and fly away?
They shrugged.
They die a day or two later.
Horrified, I looked between the two.
I don't want Nif to die. I don't want her to be a zombie, either.
Royce patted my shoulder.
Like we said, it sucks. But there might not be anything you can do. This isn't the kind of monster that's usually defeated by a single dude in the movies.
I don't care about defeating the monster. I just want to save my wife. Or die trying.
I didn't realize it until I said it. But I meant it. I would die to save her. That's a pretty potent realization. And I know people say shit like that all the time. I can't live without you, baby. But I knew it was true. I could feel it in the beating of my heart. I had run away from the monster earlier, which was the smart and prudent thing to do. But I had felt so damned guilty and empty about it. Now I realized why I felt that way.
Okay,
Randy said.
Blind, undying love. We can see that. Let's figure this out,
Royce said.